Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, we're going to tackle a subject that gets a little bit off the beaten track. We've talked about a variety of things. We've talked about nutrition. We've talked about medicine. We've talked about vitamins and supplements. We've talked about hazards from environmental toxins. But there is a hazard that is looming on the horizon that may undermine our health, and yet it's getting very little attention. It is highly controversial. It is not getting much publicity, in fact. And that is hazards associated with what we call EMFs, electromagnetic fields. And to guide us in a discussion about this subject, we've invited a distinguished guest. He's Associate Professor, Columbia University Department of Physiology and Cellular Biophysics, Dr. Martin Blank. Dr. Blank is a leading expert in the effects of electromagnetic fields in biology, which is important because our bodies work using electromagnetic fields, and it stands to reason that external electromagnetic fields may have an influence on our own physiology. He is going to be a lecturer at an upcoming seminar at the Open Center in New York City. You want to hear about that because it's going to be a variety of great speakers on this important subject of electromagnetic fields and their potential risks. And he also has a forthcoming book, Overpowered is the title, and it's scheduled to be published early next year. So without further ado, let's introduce our guest, Professor Martin Blank. Nice to have you here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Glad to participate.
Good. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this.
Well, I've been working on electricity, the role of electricity, electric fields in the body, and been interested in things like how ions, charged particles, get across the membranes, which don't normally conduct. I've been interested in how excitation carries these electrical signals along nerves to get our muscles to contract, things like that. And I came across a paper by a colleague in another department who claimed effects of magnetic fields. And one of the things that we've been teaching physiology for many years, and we come across many textbooks that deal with physiology, they all talk about electric fields as being important. Nobody seems to mention magnetic. Oh, they mention it as a way one measures, like EEGs, or you can use magnetic fields to detect things, but they didn't mention it as being important or influential.
Right. I mean, some of our medical diagnostic tests actually read electrical impulses from the body, like our electrocardiograms. They basically read impulses from the chest that emanate from the heart. The same thing with EEGs, electroencephalograms. They actually can read brain waves. So our bodies are transmitting these electrical impulses continually throughout our nerves and throughout all our cells.
That's right. And the thing is that when we were teaching physiology, we didn't mention magnetic fields other than those special applications. And when the colleague published these papers about the effects of magnetic fields, I found it hard to incorporate in what I've known about physiology. And I met her and we talked, and I saw the data, and I decided to try it. And by God, it worked. These fields were very effective, not only like electric fields, but even at very, very small fields. The kinds that one doesn't feel them even when they're quite strong.
When you say effective, you know, it sounds like that would be a good thing, but effective means that they have effects for good potentially, but also for harm, correct?
Right. They influence the process. Many of them will accelerate. The system I was studying was a reaction that causes ions, that is charged atoms, to move across the membrane, and I found that it accelerated the rate. That is, certain frequencies were able to accelerate the rate.
Right.
And it did so at very, very low field strengths. That was the surprising part.
So anyway,
I got into it this way, and it developed even more. That is, you found that it really affected many things. And one of the surprising things that came out, and that this is something that we discovered, that's Dr. Reba Goodman, who's in the pathology department, was the colleague, and I were working on this, and we found that the body reacts to these magnetic fields as if they're harmful. In other words, the body has its own warning system. We know that, we all know about the fact that we'll secrete cortisol, you know, when we get excited and when we need our energy, when we're running, you'll get this, your heart will pump faster, you'll breathe faster. That's the systemic kind of response to when we have to get ourselves mobilized. But the cells have the same kind of thing on a much smaller basis, and they call this a cellular stress response. And this is characterized by making special proteins. These special proteins were first identified with the effect of high temperature. You know, we exist at a constant temperature, and if our temperature goes up, we know we're not well. But to keep the temperature in place, we have a whole bunch of mechanisms, and when they go out, suddenly the cells that get higher temperatures start to produce these special stress proteins.
Are these called heat shock proteins?
That's right. I was just going to say that because they were first identified with an increase in temperature, they're called heat shock proteins. And the thing that we found is that it takes very, very little electromagnetic energy to produce the same heat shock proteins. They're stress proteins, and that's what they're called now. And they come with all kinds of bad things. In other words, if you have alcohol, for example, cells don't like it, and the thing is they will produce stress proteins. They'll produce stress proteins with an increase in acidity. I mean, a whole bunch of heavy metals, all kinds of bad things, the cells react to it. And so the body has this warning system, and it goes off with very, very low electromagnetic fields around, which means that the cells are complaining that things are bad. Now, the people who make the standards of what one is supposed to be able to sustain in life, they have their own ideas of what's good and what's bad. They think that the only thing that matters is an increase in temperature. This is the so-called thermal standard.
Right. So if you hold a cell phone to, you know, directly to your ear, you'll notice that it kind of warms up. So the concern is it's going to this heat that's administered to your cheekbone or your ear or perhaps even to the external parts of your brain, is that going to fry your cells? I mean, that would be their concern.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to really fry. That's the thing. You don't have to get very much of an increase in temperature. And it's an interesting thing they've done. One of the studies that's been done with the development of cancers in the salivary glands that are very close to where one holds a cell phone. There are two kinds of salivary glands, the kind like the parotid, which are high in the relatively high in the cheek above the jawbone, and there are others that the sublingual salivary gland, which is below the jawbone, and you find that there are differences in the rates of cancer in these two different salivary glands. And one has stayed more or less constant, the one that's shielded by the jawbone, but the other one has been going up since the use of the introduction of cell phones. And it's almost like there's a controlled experiment going on in a population where one kind that gets even a slightly more exposure of to cell phones is showing this increase in the parotid cancer of the parotid gland.
Now you say it's a controlled experiment. How long might it take for such a cancer to originate? Cell phones have been around for maybe 15 years at most, and so is it conceivable that we haven't yet begun to see the potential surge in cancers that are caused by this form of electromagnetic radiation?
The answer is almost certainly yes, but of course this was only one study that's been done, and it was done in Israel where they introduced cell phones very early in the history of cell phones, and as a result they've accumulated these data, and even with a small population this stuff shows up. You look at the data, you have one is a flat curve, very low incidence of these cancers of the shielded salivary glands, but the ones that are exposed, you get an increase, and it's been going up steadily. Now, I think this was published a few years ago. They probably have more data. I haven't seen any more publications. I don't think there are any. But this is just one interesting case. There are other cases of the cancers that develop in gliomas. That is in the brain, in the area, very cancer of the brain.
So, Dr. Blank, I have to say though that there have been a variety of studies big studies. Some of them have been criticized because they've been performed by the cell phone industry, which vindicate cell phones and basically say that cell phones are harmless, that they can't cause cancer, and they're perfectly safe for people to use. What's your take on those studies?
Well, when one does an analysis of this thing, and I'm not an epidemiology expert, but those who are have done an analysis, and they find that there are such obvious distortions in the way that study was set up, and the results are really valueless. They're just a big waste of money, including the last big study. Probably the most interesting study that nobody really wants to refer to too often was done by Sam Millam, who was an epidemiologist who has studied this system for a long time. And the interesting thing is that he has taken data that are there, that are official data that were put down by people who didn't have a dog in that fight. These are statistics, vital statistics of how many people died of cancer or cardiovascular disease or diabetes and so on in different states. And what happened is that as electrification was introduced into the country in the 20th century, you got very big differences in the rate at which it was introduced. Cities introduced it before rural areas. The North was introduced before the South. And so when you compare these vital statistics from the different parts of the country, you find that there's a direct correlation between the increase in incidence of cancer, and electrification. The same with cardiovascular disease, and the same with diabetes, and surprisingly also with suicide. He's got a great book out called Dirty Electricity, and he gives this. These are data that were, put on the record by people who didn't have any axe to grind, and that's what it shows. And that's in keeping with the data that have been found by people who've done studies. The best studies that have been done on cancer, brain cancer, were the ones that were done by Hardell in Sweden. He did things like include not only the cell phones, but the portable or whatever, the cordless phones. The thing is that the cordless phones were originally called non-cell phones. So in the first study, the big Danish study, they took people who had cordless phones and counted them as not having cell phones. So you have people who were exposed to the same kind of radiation counting as people who are not exposed. Now, is it a wonder that the data showed were all screwed up and you showed no difference or no significant difference? So there are these abuses of the people who set up the studies that have obscured any effect, and the data that have been around for a long time that people some people have been able to analyze, at least in part, have tended to corroborate the ideas that have shown a correlation with all kinds of illness, in particular cancer.
Well, you open up several cans of worms with that last comment, because number one, you talk about not just the effects of cell phones per se, but the effects of electrification. And we live in electrical environments, and we'll touch upon some of the exposures. You also talk about a wide variety of diseases that may be attributable to EMFs. And we're not just talking about local effects like cancer of the parotid gland or cancer of the brain on the side you're holding the phone, but systemic diseases that are, seemingly unrelated, like diabetes, cardiovascular disease, mental disorders, and so on. So which subject do you want to tackle first?
Well, it's just what I'm saying is that there are fascinating data out there that make one pause and say, has all this electrification and the introduction of these kinds of signals affected our lives so substantially that we've increased the amount of disease? And I think that there's a good case to be made. And the reason I think that is that the stuff that I do, the science that I've been doing, has been at the level of the cell. In other words, I don't worry about things or what happens to the population. I say, what happens to cells that are exposed to this kind of radiation? And we find that cells will have different, these radiations will have an effect on the cells. We have studied this reaction, this cellular stress response, which is the body's
what should we say, first responders to damage that occurs in it. And we found that it occurs with power lines, power line voltages, and it occurs with cell phone voltages. And the amazing thing is that those experiments show unequivocally that the standard that is being used to determine the response of a cell is worthless, because what happens is it takes a certain amount of energy to do it as radio frequency, but it takes less than a millionth, a small fraction of that, to do it when it comes as in the form of power line frequency. So that there are differences in the frequencies. And one of the scary things is that we keep on pushing to higher and higher frequencies, which apparently pack much more of a thermal punch, but they're useful for the electronic purposes, because you can pack more information into these signals, into these waves. But the thing is that as a medical issue, it's just adding to the problem. But I think it will also add to the problem that the standards, because with the increase in frequency, they're getting higher and higher energy deposition, and the temperature is going to go up. So I think there's going to be pressure on the safety standards. But the safety standards are just way out of line. They're at least 1,000 times too high in terms of the responses of the body to the very simple signals that do cause the damage.
Well, to put it into a concrete way, I personally live in New York City, you know, surrounded by electromagnetic radiation. I live in a 40-story building with scores of other apartments. And sometimes when I'm looking to reestablish my Wi-Fi, I'll look for a signal. And there are 20 or more signals that I can latch on to. That means that invisible to me, not perceived by my senses, electromagnetic waves are penetrating into my apartment 24/7, while I'm awake, while I'm asleep. And the concern is, do they have the potential to disrupt cellular physiology?
Definitely. I mean, the cell doesn't know where these signals are coming from. Any signal that comes in will have an effect. It's just the nature of living cells, that they're exposed to the environment, and whatever the environment offers, that they're going to respond to it.
Wow. And what about
a
certain
house?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I say it's scary, because the thing is that, well, you know, when it gets cold, you can put on a jacket because you feel it. But when you go out and have all these waves around you, you don't know anything's going on, because
right.
You don't sense them.
Right.
That's the scary part. If you sensed it, then you'd do something about it.
And what about typical household appliances? You know, we're often told pregnant women shouldn't use electric blankets, for example, because that's a pretty definite way to set up an electromagnetic field around a part of your body that you're kind of concerned about, the developing fetus. What about just normal household sources of EMFs, or even, you know, now we have electric cars. What about that?
Yeah, well, you also have the steel-belted tires, the steel-belted radials, that apparently when they're rotating, they will generate EMFs, and they've actually measured the effects of people sitting in the back seat.
Wow.
I don't remember the actual numbers. But,
so,
I mean,
they're like little generators, in effect. They're a coil that spins,
right.
And any kind of coil that spins around an axis might generate fields.
Yeah, well, it will. The thing is, it does. There's no question about it. And
wow.
The people who are sitting there will be exposed to it.
We
don't realize what's around us. And the thing is that we don't want to, because people have been told about this, the problems. But everybody's kind of happy the way things are. And since they don't feel it, they don't feel the need to make any changes.
Right.
So that's
the problem.
People are not aware.
You are an outspoken opponent of these standards, which you feel are too low, and you're also a professor, an academic. Have you ever come into under pressure from your peers or from the outside, from the industry, saying, hey, you know, you're making alarmist statements, there's no basis for it, why don't you just, just put a lid on it?
Well, no. It's one of the things about academics is they can be ignored, and most of that's the easiest thing
okay.
to, for people to do. They ignore. But the there have been you know, I've sparred with somebody in the literature. I publish something and somebody sends in a letter, and I you know, a comment. And in this last case, for example, I the editor sent it to me for refereeing. That's the first of all, it's a polite thing to do about the comment. And then he asked me to comment, you know, so do a referee's report on it. So I did a referee's report. I said, this thing is wrong, and this thing is wrong, and this makes no sense, and so on, and I don't, and I recommend it not be published. So the editor came back to me and said, you know, they editors like to have this kind of, I don't know, not controversy, but discussion, I guess, the way they put it. He said, well, you know, I'd really like to put in something, so could I put in both? The comments, you know, his comment and your rebuttal and that kind of. So I said, okay, that would be instructive, and so that he did that. But that's an unusual thing. Most
right.
of the time, the people will ignore. That's the safest thing to do. And when they do it, I've crossed swords at meetings, but that's about it.
So, again, when it comes to the household, you know, what are some of the actual sources of EMFs in a let's go to the typical home. Let's start with the kitchen. What might be a source of electromagnetic fields within the kitchen?
Well, virtually all the labor saving devices, but the real big one is the microwave oven. That's the
okay.
biggest one, and it's most of the microwave ovens apparently. I think they allow a certain amount of leakage to start with, but
yeah.
certainly after they've been used for a while, the devices will leak. The doors don't close as well, and so this is a problem. So if it's on, you should be away from it. But the real reason to be away from it is that the microwaves that do the cooking inside are powered by a power pack that runs on 60 hertz. Microwaves are the 2400 megahertz, and this is 60 hertz that powers the power pack, the regular line voltage.
Right.
And the thing is that carries a lot. That has a very, very high field, and that's relatively strong, and people don't worry about that. They worry about the microwave exposure, but the exposure from the power frequency is also a problem. And so you're advised to stay far away from the microwave oven when it's in operation.
Wow.
Refrigerators are also working. They're working around the clock, and the thing about a refrigerator is most are designed to put the power pack in the back, the compressor and so on, in the back of the unit so that people in the kitchen will not be exposed as much. But the back wall of your kitchen
yeah.
may very well be...
Maybe adjoin your bedroom. It may be right
yeah.
next to the headboard of your bed.
Right. So there are things that one does not know and one ought to know. I know the case where in a children's nursery, the teacher used to have these sessions where she would... have all the kids sit in a little circle in the middle of the room, and she'd be amongst them, and they would tell stories and so on. And somebody actually did a survey of the place and found that the middle of the room was right above a fluorescent light on the floor below.
Uh-huh.
And it generated, and when that light was on, it generated a substantial field. And so these kids were sitting around being entertained and learning and at the same time being exposed when they really shouldn't have been. In other words, one should have taken care not to use that particular place for that
right.
particular exercise.
And just speaking of lights, you know, we've gone from the incandescent lights to compact fluorescent lights as a matter of national policy, energy saving, and progress. Is that a good idea, or do they generate more EMFs?
It generates a different kind. It's you can stay if you know where the problem is, then you try and stay away from it. You're not going to get away from this no matter where you go.
Right.
If you're living in
nowhere to run, nowhere to hide.
Community.
Unless you go back
yep.
to a cave.
Yep, that's about it. But the thing is that you can at least become aware of where the sources are and try and stay as far away from them as you can. And that's really what you do. It's the same thing. If people
and how can you become aware of that? I mean, are there devices that measure this, or do you simply look up what these and kind of do a inventory of what's in your home and try to minimize and shield devices that are around?
The answer is you do everything. You read about it and you become aware of what things are, and you buy equipment. There are units that you can buy, meters that are available for the public. Get simple ones, because you can get very good ones, but the very good ones are complicated, and usually you have to use them in special ways. So it's best to get the simplest ones, and get readings, and you'll get an idea very quickly.
Uh-huh.
There are even devices that have that give a sound rather than a meter reading, so that when the sound becomes more intense, you know that the you've got a stronger
like a Geiger counter,
so
sort of.
What's that?
Working on the same principle as like a Geiger counter.
Oh yeah, that's right. That gives you just these little beeps. And this one will just give you a whatever they've programmed, just a louder noise.
Right. Okay. So this is a controversial realm that I'm going to move us into. Is there are people with mysterious ailments? You know, they just don't know what's afflicting them. I'm a physician. I see people with unexplained ailments where they have fatigue, malaise. Is it conceivable that they're suffering from the ill effects of electromagnetic fields, or is it if you start thinking that way, do you become a paranoid schizophrenic, thinking that virtually everything is affecting you?
Well, the thing is that I guess as a physician, you must know. I'm not a physician, but we teach doctors, and one of the things we try and teach, I remember the very first exercise we used to do for first year students in physiology, was to show the variety of, among people. In other words, we used to do height and weight and things, or a number of different functions, and show that even in a class that's relatively uniform, that is first-year medical students, you find a great variety of responses and a great variety of physical features. Electrical sensitivity has been measured also. And there are things like skin resistance, which is a pretty simple measure of how much electricity can get through into the cells. And that varies in the population by a factor of about 100, from the most sensitive to the least sensitive. And the most sensitive constitute about 3% of the population, where you believe that's, or at least the papers that were written, said that these people are the ones who are probably the most sensitive to these kinds of things. So I think one should expect in a general population that there will be a certain number, a certain percentage, that will be unusually sensitive to these fields. And that's true, I guess, in lots of, lots of biological abnormalities, that there are people who are constitutionally predisposed to have certain kinds of illnesses.
And are there, I've read actually case studies, I'm not an expert in this, but I've read case studies of people who've done some form of EMF abatement in their environments, and they've actually come out of some pretty challenging medical conditions. In some cases, it's abnormal blood sugar conditions, in some cases, debilitating fatigue and fibromyalgia. Are you aware of such cases?
I've heard of them, but I haven't really looked into it in detail.
But okay.
Yeah, I can believe that. I mean, there are sometimes, very simple things will cause a very large change in the way the physiology functions.
If you're, when you go to sleep, is it a good idea to unhook your Wi-Fi, to just pull it out, and so that it's not sending signals throughout your home or apartment?
You should cut it off whenever you're not using it. That's the critical thing. The Wi-Fi, if it's on, it's going to be sending these signals as long as it's on. One thing that's probably very important is that men tend to carry cell phones in their pockets.
In their pants pockets.
It's been shown in their pants pockets, right? And one of the things that's been shown is that there is an effect on the sperm count.
Wow.
Not only the count, but even the sperm, you know, they get abnormalities in structure, the distortion of the sperm tail, things like that. So this has been seen a number of times and reported in, you know, good studies in fertility clinics, that the that they've shown that the extent of exposure correlates with the extent of effects on the sperm count. So it's a real thing. They sell these little things that you know, you can put the cell phone in,
like a shield.
They sell pocket liners,
right?
Like a shield, a magnetic shield that will cut it down. But you're best off not keeping it, and we're not keeping it there.
Right.
Women tend to apparently, I don't know if they tend to, but there are a number of cases where they tend to put the cell phone in their bra.
And right. Yeah, I've actually seen some women tuck their cell phone into their décolletage, into their cleavage. I'm wondering if that's such a good idea.
That's terrible, because they've actually had a case where, you know, they saw the I guess the tumor developed where the cell phone was put, you know, in the bra. It's definitely a foreign influence that causes problems with cells. And when you get that, it's bad news if you keep on doing it. So some people will take a long time. I had a friend who unfortunately was exposed to, who developed mesothelioma by being exposed to asbestos fibers,
right.
The bad kind, but at a very relatively early age. He started studying that when he was about 25. He didn't develop the mesothelioma, at least symptomatically. It didn't come about until he was in his 60s.
Right. So this is a time course of many decades before, you know, there's this early precancer, carcinogenesis, metastasis. It's a long process.
Yeah, and the thing is, some are faster than others, and I think that the mesothelioma apparently is a very slow one. But the thing is that the brain tumors apparently come on pretty quickly. I mean, people have seen that. There's someone I know in San Francisco who's active in the anti-EMF, or at least the EMF abatement movement, if you want to call it that. That who developed it, he was a realtor, and the thing is, he was constantly on the phone in contact with people, you know, making appointments, and he always on the run, so he had his phone with him all the time, and he developed a brain tumor.
Goodness.
And I mean, that's just a personal case that I know, and he says that he developed it where, you know, the side he kept his phone on, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the... some people will luck out, and they won't. They will suffer a lot of this kind of exposure and not develop these problems. But you're best off not playing that game. You know, not taking the chance. Why do it? I mean, I don't own a cell phone, which is I don't find the need. You see, I have a couple of phones. Numbers that you could call a landline, and then this other Magic Jack, which is a phone that works from the computer, and I take that with me when I travel. So I have my computer, when I can plug in and make contact with the internet, then I can use that phone. So it's not bad. You can do it. It's not as convenient, but on the other hand, it's a lot safer.
What is your take on the phenomenon that we see now with kids being given cell phones at a very early age? I mean, they say it's for safety, for communication. I want to keep track of my kid. The kid takes the cell phone to school. And practically, I mean, we see kids that practically it becomes an appendage. They use it 24/7.
Yeah, it's hard to... One cannot overemphasize the damage that occurs to children.
So, Dr. Blank, a population where we have particular concerns is pregnant women. Do you have anything to say about the relationship between EMF exposure and pregnancy outcomes?
Well, this has been studied by Dr. Lee in California, and he published a study showing that there is an increase in miscarriages that are associated with exposure. This is to electric blankets, and a certain level of field will induce a miscarriage. But then he had the good sense to follow up the children who were born from these exposures. So he had a record of exposure in utero and the outcome, and found that there was an increase in asthma in these children, and these are young teenagers, I guess, now, and an increase in diabetes as well, so that the you've got the an increase in obesity. And the thing is that both of these increases were significant. In other words, they seem to be directly correlated with the level of exposure. So that it's really a when you're dealing with children where their cells are developing and the child is growing, so they're getting more and more cells. It's absolutely imperative that they not be exposed to these kinds of influence that are going to distort the cell and cause old problems later on.
Wow. Okay. So important stuff. And you can learn more about this at an upcoming seminar that's going to be held at the Open Center in a couple of months on November 15th, 2013. It's a Friday from 7 to 10. How to protect ourselves and growing children from electromagnetic fields. Dr. Blank will be one of the excellent speakers who will be there, and there'll be a variety of them. And also, let's highlight the upcoming book that apparently it's already completed. It's about to be released beginning of next year, Overpowered: The Dangers of Electromagnetic Radiation and What You Can Do About It. Tell us briefly about your upcoming book.
Well, it's basically a review of all of the things that associated with electromagnetic fields, from the history part to the starting with the early observations and the kinds of effects that one knows are due to these electrical things. But then it goes on to the atomic part, the molecular part of the problem. In other words, the biology. Up till now, we've had to rely on engineers to set our safety standards and corporations to set our desires for these various pieces of equipment, but we haven't really considered the biology. And when you consider the biology, you realize the problems that you run up against, that the body was not designed to live with this kind of in this kind of environment. If you take a look at the full spectrum that we have that we're exposed to in the electromagnetic world, most of the stuff that's in there now in the non-ionizing range, which is the lower frequency part, that wasn't here 200 years ago. And so we weren't equipped to, we didn't evolve in a world where this stuff was helping us develop a kind of ability to live that way. And now we're in this kind of world with all this EMF about us, and we're having to cope with a whole bunch of things that we just weren't designed for. So I think when people realize this, they'll start thinking twice about exposing themselves and continuing to get more and more gadgets. It's a real problem, and I think that one can't make a start soon enough because it's already reached a lot of people, and we're getting all more and more problems in the quality of life as a result of all this electromagnetic fields around us.
Okay, the
so,
book is...
Anyway,
just go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just saying that we're trying to educate the people in terms of the real science. In other words, it's not, you can get, gee, Mom, look, Mom, no hands, then all kind of thing. Gee whiz, yes, you can make great little gadgets and stuff, but one must realize that these are dangerous things, too, and you got to learn how to live with them. And some of them you may want to live without. In other words, it may not be that important to have some of these.
Okay, so a very important
perspective.
And so the book is Overpowered, The Dangers of Electromagnetic Radiation and What You Can Do About It. It will be released the beginning of 2014. And if you want to learn more about EMFs and potential hazards, the Open Center in Manhattan, November 15, 2013. And actually, this is the first in a series that we're doing on EMFs. Dr. Martin Blank, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah, you're quite welcome.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Make sure you join us for our next edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.